So, as you might have noticed from the title that is appearing on your player, the title of this lecture is Going Against the Grain. You know, in English we have this saying, going with the grain, which means that you go, wood has a grain, yeah? It goes in a certain direction. And if you cut against the grain, it's easy to cut. If you cut with the grain moves your saw, you know? So, when you say going with the grain, that means you're kind of going with the flow of things. And when you're going against the grain, you're going against the flow of things. So, the reason I'm using this as a lecture topic today is because Pamu, our friend in Finland, suggested it about maybe 3 weeks ago, and I didn't really see it as a full lecture topic, but now I think it's relevant. The idea of this theme is to encourage or to support those few people in the world who do not necessarily follow what the mainstream of thought is. Of course, you can divide up population in any way you want. You can say there are those with black hair and those with not black hair and those who have darker skin and lighter skin, or those who are rich, those who are poor. So we can also divide the world up into those who like to go with the flow of everybody else, or who like to go along with everybody else, and those who don't. Now, as you well know, most of you and me who are participating in these broadcasts are of the second class, not in quality, but in our categorization, who go against what the normal flow of expectations are amongst certain spiritualists. We have followed for quite some time a certain discipline. We have understood what it means to be a follower. We have dedicated ourselves to a particular practice. And we have concluded that acting simply according to the expectations of others is not necessarily good for us. We have understood that we are individualists who need to take a stand for what we believe, what we think, what we feel, without having to be influenced or pressured by external forces to adjust what we think or what we feel. We have understood the power that has been given to us by the Supreme to make choices. We have understood that the making of these choices goes far beyond the one choice to either follow or not. We have understood that there are occasions, there are times, there are situations when formulas or previous understandings no longer fit our needs or the needs of others around us. Now, from our point of view, this is nothing terribly special. It seems to be rather common sense. We would think that this is what everybody should do. But that would only apply if everybody was responsible, mature, could control themselves, knew what is right and what was wrong. Let me use an example which is neutral and which doesn't have any negative connotations in our historical understanding of our own lives. Life is, of course, a process of growth, and there is a certain regulation in that growth. For example, children have to go through the educational process, and to do so, they have to follow the regulations of the institution they are in. While they are in that institutional framework, they have to follow very properly, otherwise they can be suspended or they could get into various forms of difficulty which are unpleasant for them. Similarly, in a society there are laws, there are regulations to govern the flow of traffic. to govern the way buildings are built, to govern the way in which we deal with each other, to prevent crime or to prevent violence against people. Now, we are familiar that there are certain forms of regulation, there are certain forms of stricture where we are kept within certain boundaries and limitations, which are beneficial for all people concerned. However, let's go back to the example of the children in the school who we have to keep within a certain restriction to keep order, to keep sanity, and perhaps to teach them something. We have seen, especially in the modern school systems, that children do not necessarily follow all of these things as soon as they have a chance not to. They cause each other difficulty, they get into fights, they get into conflicts. As soon as they're outside of the school grounds, they can do anything and everything, which is exactly what they should not do when they are in school. Now, I know in my school, I'm not sure if the situation is the same with you, but in my school, there were always a lot of people who ended up in the bathrooms smoking like anything. Now, in this school, or shall we say in this kind of a situation where you are being restricted, it does not actually change much within you, but it does regulate the way you act within a social environment. The same is true in a political organization of a society. You may be regulated in a particular way, but that does not change much within you. It is something you have to do because you have to do it, and if you find a way to avoid it, you will if you want. There is a very famous case in America with a big, big company, WorldCom, which was a communications company, where they managed to cheat out of the company something like $10 billion or some huge amount of money. Now, these are very sophisticated people. They are very educated people. They came from a cultural atmosphere which was supposed to be of a higher quality. Yet they are practically some of the biggest thieves you can think of outside of certain governments which take as much money from the people as that. So we have examples of how simply restricting somebody is not necessarily a way to transform them, because if they have the opportunity to do something that is beneficial to them against your interests, laws or restrictions or principles don't really count anymore. So we have to see what this really means, what this refers to, what the implications of this understanding could possibly be. It is very, very important that we see things in the context of how they manifest in a very general way to understand these overriding principles which everybody accepts without really questioning too much. When we look at the example of the children, we can understand that the real benefit or the real training of an individual comes when they accept within their heart, when they accept within their awareness, a feeling that doing things in a certain way benefits them, benefits others, and therefore it is right. This contrasts doing it just because you're supposed to. So it would make sense that creating a system by which people feel personally responsible for their lives and that which is around their lives is actually superior to a system where people just do things because they are expected to or they have to. But this would require that the educational systems, that the society's means of transferring values, would have to be rather evolved, which is not the case at present to a large extent. But the class of individualists says that unless you start to create this, unless you start to endeavor to create a feeling and an actual realization of personal responsibility, you'll never get to the point where restrictions and forced following of anything will ever become obsolete. And here we come to the theme of this lecture. Going against the grain means to do things against the actual powerful flow that has been artificially created, or maybe not artificially, by those who wish it to be the way it is. You would think that it would be in the interests of governments, of those who lead education, of the media, to help create a society where people are, of their own evolution, aware of how acting in a beneficial way for all is good for them and everyone else. But they don't think like that. And the reason they don't think like that is because they have a vested interest. That means their economy, their economic wealth, the development of their wealth and prosperity is intimately linked to maintaining the status quo. Maintaining the status quo means that people do things that they are directed to do by those who feel that they are maximizing their benefit when people do like that. And when somebody wants to go against the grain of that flow, they become not only an obstacle, they become a threat. Let me give an example from our own history, which many of us, our own meaning, our own spiritual development history, which may or may not be relevant to 100% of the people listening, but it's a good example for those who know, of how a very good ideal transformed or became captured by this economic necessity. Let's say you are a very, very, very good person, very idealistic person. You really want to transform the world and help people spiritually. And you simply pray for the opportunity to significantly impact this society and the world and make a transformation from a demoniac, as you label it, society, to a godly society. And you sincerely and idealistically start to do that without too many expectations, but you have in your mind this overriding goal of what you want to do. And by the grace of God, you manage to get some people interested in what you are doing. They start to feel some benefit. They start to feel that original taste and flavor of this wonderful thing you are offering them in your spiritual gift to them. And you like helping people. There's no doubt about it. But also alongside with this is that idea, which was there from the very beginning, to transform society, to have a huge impact all over the world, to change things. You are, in fact, going against the grain. You are, in fact, doing something so different against the status quo that you are considered to be a rebel in normal terms of society. But at one point you wake up to the propaganda capacity of the modern world through media in the printed form or the form of communication or the form of presentations in film, video, whatever, sound. And you really start to see the possibility of making a great impact using that media. So you start to do different things to impact people. And it starts to develop an economic flow. Money is flowing in, and you're increasing those things which are impacting people. It is idealistically heaven. It is the perfect marriage of idealism and economic development or economic expansion. It's just flowing, and it's just perfect in all respects, it seems. Now, the problem is that this whole flow of the expansion of prosperity, whatever way you might use it, is in itself something which is addictive, something which is, by its very nature, a thing which can capture you and divert your idealism in a very significant way. So the individual becomes less important. What becomes more important is that reaching out to everyone, everyone everywhere, through this wonderful medium that has been developed. So in other words, you've gone from personalism to the vast impersonalism of everyone, because that is the implication of the expansive media. And you don't really care so much anymore about the needs and the requirements of the individual, because you are doing something else to save the world. There are those who could say that in the Islamic faith, there are people who have the same idea, except their means of gaining the economic power was through oil, therefore they didn't have to do other things. You could actually use the same format of analysis to pinpoint the same disease in each and every religion or spiritual group, where at one point in their development, they realized, wait a minute, there's a lot of money to be made in what we are doing, and when we get it, we can do something wonderful to save the world and control the world, so the world will be saved whether it wants it or not. So ultimately, those things which start out as very idealistic and with a great desire to help others end up to be something which wishes to give you something and perpetuate itself and gain power. I mean, I heard a broadcast on PBS the other day where one scholar was speaking about how America has fallen into the hands, and the Republican Party has fallen into the hands, of radical Christians who feel that they are going to save the world with their particular way of seeing things. You can understand, if you think about it, that an idealist is only as valuable, first of all, as the validity of their ideal, and second of all, their capacity to maintain that valid ideal despite opulence or economic advancement or power. And that is a very, very difficult task, even for the best of all people. Now, what we are doing here is somewhat interesting, because we are also going against the grain. We're going against the grain of organized spirituality. A lot of people write to me and they say, hey, you know, what about rules? What about regulations? What about having restrictions and procedures that you follow, formulas that you follow to get where you're going? What's wrong with that? Don't you have anything like that? I've gotten so many letters like this in the last week from different sources. It's just amazing. So I said, hey, we've got to talk about this. And I tell them all, I say, hey, you know, I'm going against the grain here. I don't believe in these things as an absolute principle. To the extent that these things serve my personal purposes or the personal purposes of any particular individual, sure, we may accept them as we like. But where these principles interfere or cause actually damage, we don't accept them. So immediately it is assumed by all these people that you are against the parampara, which in their minds means a succession of rules and that you have to follow. And the topmost of all those rules is that you have to accept the parampara and the representatives of it, otherwise you are just simply a rascal. Now, I don't bother getting into conversations about how the parampara is, of course, a creation of somebody's list. who makes a list. It's not really something which is existing in a physical reality that you can grasp onto and pin down somewhere. It's just something that you accept because you think it's something good to accept. I don't want to get into that conversation because that's something for scholars who are within those traditions to get into and argue about. It gives them something to engage themselves so they feel that they are useful members of their society. But this whole idea that all of your advancement is based upon your following certain rules and regulations, and those rules and regulations are this, is difficult. It's troublesome. Now, people who go against the grain like this, who go against the whole flow of that which everybody accepts is true, isn't it? There's no question to it. They are rebels. They are rebels because they do not follow. And when you do not follow, you are either damned to go to hell, or you are an obstacle for others, or you're a bad example, or even worse, you are a threat to the status quo. Now, it is not that I, for instance, I can't speak for you, but I don't feel that I'm a rebel. I don't feel that I'm trying to be an obstacle or I'm trying to destroy the status quo. And I certainly don't want to be a threat. Ultimately, I'm just doing what I feel is right for me. Now, some people have written recently and said, yeah, but you want everybody to listen to you and you want everybody to believe you and you want everybody ultimately to follow you. Well, if I'm giving a discussion like this, and taking 4 hours out of my day, I would appreciate if you listened to it, but you don't have to. So if you were to follow what I'm saying, then you would understand you should not follow what I'm saying. So that's not bad either. And since you're not following what I'm saying, I'm not leading you anywhere. But if you were to listen to what I'm saying, and perhaps explain it to somebody else who is within the status quo, you would be a threat because you would be somehow exposing them to the blasphemy that following is not necessarily good. But even if you got that from me, and therefore I'm the threat, I'm not the one who created this understanding. It's been there throughout time. So I'm not the threat, the source of the threat either. So I guess the source of the threat is actually Maya. But we've been battling against Maya, if we're in the status quo, forever. So what's different? But the real problem is they point to me, for instance, and they say, but you should know better. After all, you taught me to follow. Well, by the same token, I didn't really teach you to follow. I was just repeating what I was told to do. So we could blame the one who taught me. But then you can't blame him either because somebody taught him. So who do you blame? Lord Brahma? Actually, this concept of just following, this is not really the essence of spirituality. The real essence of spirituality is personal responsibility for the choices you make and the path that you take. I don't mean to say, I take your path and from now on I never think again. I mean to say, the path that I am on, each and every step I am taking with my own personal responsibility for the consequences of what I do. Now, this is not a very easy concept for people who are stuck, who have taken shelter of and who are embracing a formula for spiritual life. And people like me who simply discuss the possibility that formulas are not very useful in spiritual life are actually reflecting the reality of the experiences of most people who have not been able to find their success in following formulas. If you consider how many people have come into contact with this spiritual organization. Over the years, you'll find it's an enormous number, maybe 20,000, 30,000. And how many are actually still following the formula precisely? Very few. Now, if you were to look from a scholarly point of view, if you were to look from the point of view of somebody who liked to analyze things deeper, who didn't just accept what people said, you would have to immediately question, why is that so? Now, you might go and ask those little few who are still following perfectly. They would give you the answer that it's because this other huge group cannot follow because they are not qualified to do so. But if you were a common sense scholar, you might ask, but if you propose that your movement is for everybody, you wish to help everybody, then why do you make things so difficult that most people can't do it, if that's what you think? Why don't you adjust what you are doing so everybody can get benefit from it? Wouldn't that obviously be beneficial to you too? But then, if I was actually a scholar, I would say, well, considering the fact that most people aren't interested in that, I would say that what you have assumed as the best way to evolve is factually irrelevant to most people, and therefore not the best way to evolve. And therefore, as many have concluded, this concept of following is more or less a tool for economic development. It keeps order, it's easier for this hierarchical structure to manage, and so on. Therefore, I have personally understood that there is no value to asking people or forcing people to do anything. Everybody should do what they feel led to do by their own development and their own evolution. And you can suggest to people various things which would be beneficial to them, and it is up to them to take in the way they feel it makes the most sense for them. Now, if they do not really understand how to find out what's the best for them, give them the possibility. Train them in the procedures to find out what is the best for them, to distill what is the essence of what they thrive on, what inspires them. Instead of dictating, educate and give possibilities. If your economic survival is not dependent on the choices they make, you can neutrally and actually lovingly assist people spiritually. So it is very, very important that people who have a understanding of spiritual life be allowed to accept that understanding of spiritual life according to what is good for them, not according to what is good for you. Okay, that's obvious. Let's move on. Going against the grain means what we do when we are doing what we are doing now is we are countering a lot of spiritual forces all over the world, not really spiritual, but the way people have presented it, which want things to go according to following. You believe in Jesus Christ, or you believe in Prabhupada, or you believe in this one or that one or whatever. You believe. You believe in Muhammad. And when you're in that situation, what happens is that you find yourself all of a sudden to be going against the flow that others wish you to be in. And you start to feel alone in your struggle against the world. In one form or another, the world will make propaganda against you. They will tell people things about you because you are not following them. You have to be destroyed. You have to be ridiculed. You have to be avoided. You have to be ostracized. People who were your friends are no longer your friends. Situations you thought that were fine all of a sudden change. Your whole life becomes transformed simply because you have chosen to be an individual. Initially, this really creates a lot of difficulty in almost all people. One loses confidence in oneself, if one had any. One feels insecure. One feels afraid. People are generally social animals. They like to travel in packs, in groups, because they feel very safe in groups and in packs. Most people have their families as their foundational support group, yet, in many respects, not at all. But when you come from so-called religious societies which are against families as a value, what do you have when you stand on your own? You have usually a group of friends to stand by, but that may or may not be there depending on your situation when you will go against the status quo. And when you start to swim your way through the vast ocean of possibilities that are out there in the world, you can feel like you're floating in this ocean. You don't know what's going on. Will I make it? One thinks. In other words, you were going along thinking everything made sense, and all of a sudden, it no longer makes the same sense. It makes different kinds of sense. And now it's your responsibility to make sense out of it, not that you just accept the sense that is given to you. Those people who think like this from the beginning of their lives, they don't struggle so much, and they also don't make so much evolution. Evolutionary progress. Even though what I am saying now is more or less similar to what many people believe in this world. They don't really accept any authority over them. They just do things on their own. No problem. But they also take what the media says seriously, or they also take what their idols give to them seriously. Our situation is very unique. We have been in such a situation, and we have left it. And we are not going to put ourselves under the control of the media or some ideal of the government or some business people or whatever. We know what individuality really means. So we are uniquely situated as individuals, and yet we have a unique challenge that has been facing us these years, which when we overcome or try to overcome makes us strong. In fact, you are uniquely qualified, all of you, to become very strong. You are already so much stronger than before and are so very uniquely situated as powerful people. I suppose you can see that whenever you deal with other people. You may not admit it to yourself, but when you deal with others, you can see, you can feel. You're not afraid of them. You have nothing really to worry about. You are well situated. You could even offer them something great if they want it. So even though you're going against the grain and it's a struggle and it wasn't painless, there was a lot of problem with it. Right now, you're doing fantastically well. Because the very endeavor to establish your individuality by going against the grain of the expectation of this world on you makes you strong, just as swimming up current makes you stronger than swimming with the current. Well, swimming against the current also can make you tired very rapidly, whereas swimming with the current doesn't make you tired so rapidly. So know at which point your physical limit is reached or your metaphysical limit is reached. Get out of the river, take a rest, have some fun, get back in the river when the heat is on. And in this way, develop your metaphysical muscles to such an extent that you can really fly spiritually. Those of you who have been through this process or with this process for some years now, I guarantee you, you can all be teachers who can go out and influence anybody you wish to according to your own realizations, according to your own experiences, according to your own evolutionary platform, you can help many people if you wish to do so. And you might say, well, I haven't really learned anything in terms of details to give others or gotten a certificate or something. But no, I mean in sense of your personal spiritual realization, whatever it may be, if you share it with others, you can do a great service. Because that austerity you have done in that discipline of taking personal responsibility for transforming your life from an impersonal following to a very personal determination of what you find is best makes you strong and gives you power. And that ultimately is very, very beneficial for you because it is that power and that personal realization which is going to bring you to greater and greater destinations in the future. Those who simply follow may or may not get success, even if simply following has been guaranteed to give you success. How often do those who strictly follow really follow strictly? And yet, in the same scriptures, there are so many pitfalls you have to watch out for. For example, we are always told you cannot pick and choose what you want from scripture or from regulations, like make a tossed salad. You have to accept it all. Well, let's just take, for example, this one scriptural thing that if you break a codicil, for example, even you go to Vaikuntha, you have to fall back down again. So that means right off the bat, 99% of everybody, no matter how good they follow, are just going to end up back here again. But everybody says, don't take that too seriously. Aha, so you mean you pick and you choose those things you wish to believe and follow. I understand. Yes, that's true. We pick and we choose what we wish to follow. Very good. I like that. There are many other things also, like, for example, you should believe everything in the Bhagavatam, word for word, because this has been given by Vyasadeva. This has been given by Krishna. It is the absolute truth. Then you believe all those hells. You believe the structure of the universe. You believe everything, every single word, even the one who had hundreds of millions of wives who were all barren. You have to believe every single word. But do you believe every single word? No. Because to survive in such an atmosphere, you create within your own mind and your own consciousness a whole department of things that you just try to forget about so that you can survive with those things that you can somehow or another follow. But you cannot admit that publicly, because then you would be publicly admitting that there are things you accept and things you don't accept. Yet, at the same time, you really wouldn't want to start telling people these things because they will actually think you're a little bit crazy. I mean, after all, you go around and you tell people the moon is further away than the sun, or that actually everything is flat and there are oceans of ghee and milk and all this stuff out there. You really can't say that kind of stuff because that doesn't work in the world. And therefore, you have to get people to figure out, your own scholars, how actually all of these statements really mean that everything is exactly the way everybody thinks it is, but these are allegories towards, like, you know, the Red Sea we have and the Black Sea we have. So the ocean of ghee is just some place in the universe, and it doesn't really mean flat, it means round, and, you know, moon further away than the sun, yeah, actually, well, nobody really knows, and blah, blah, blah. So you start to become an apologist for these statements, which you don't accept and nobody else accepts, really. So you start creating excuses and apologies for all these things, and you integrate it within your preaching strategy, quote unquote. And then ultimately you come up with a statement that none of this matters anyway, because Lord Chaitanya came and all he said was, chant Hare Krishna and come and visit in the temple and eat prasadam and associate with spiritualists. That's the real thing. And what do you know? That sounds to be very similar to things I've been saying. Gee, what do you know? The difference is that I come right out and say, I don't accept all these things just because I have to accept them. I come right out and admit what is the truth and actually get to the essence as the essence instead of trying to make a big smoke cloud where I say, I follow, I believe, I pledge allegiance, yet I don't really. And because I don't follow all the things I'm supposed to follow, I say, I'm not a follower. But others don't follow all the things they're supposed to follow, yet they say they are followers. I say, better to be honest, better to be truthful, better to present what is, than to create this whole illusion for the sake of something that I'm not even sure you know what it is. And when these various forms of illusion in very subtle and very pervasive ways obstruct the essence, then what is the use of them? And to be honest and admit that is not a fault, because after all, ultimately, you will say the essence is all that really matters. But to admit this means you have to go against the grain. You have to be a rebel. You have to be something which is not according to the expectation, and that's not possible. But I got news for you. You don't have to be any of that. You just have to be honest. There's a big difference. And let's face it, everybody believes what they want to believe. Everybody chooses to do what they want to do. Everybody goes in the direction they wish to go in. Let's just admit it. Because honesty is the last leg left in Kali Yuga of Dharma. And when spirituality becomes lost, it's because honesty becomes lost. So in fact, this is not rebellion. This is establishing Dharma. By taking responsibility for making the choices you want to make in the way you wish to make them, which feels good for you as a person, and being honest about what it really is in spirituality that inspires you, which gives you life, which gives you the possibility to grow. Yet, it's very, very difficult to admit this, and I understand that. So, I'm not trying to make a chastisement here. I'm trying to make a revelation, an explanation. I'm trying to give the other side by explaining it's not really another side. It's the same side, just the more honest version of it. And what we do right now, what we are doing here with these free broadcasts, donation-based, means that the only way I support these broadcasts is when you give a donation because you like it. Right? There's no business here. There's no sale of a product here. I even give you the lectures free on the internet. You can download the music free on the internet. Understand? This is all donation-based, because nobody can control you with economy, because we who do this get no economic benefit from what we do. I get no economic benefit from you. You get no economic benefit from me. Therefore, I have no reason to exploit you. You have no reason to exploit me. And any interchange we have is on the basis of how we can mutually be of service to each other and nothing else. And in reality, this is the real going against the grain. Because as I explained before, what we are just saying is just simply honesty. The real rebellion or going against the grain is this economic one. Something not based on buildings, something not based on bank accounts, something not based on constant economic expansion. Understand, that's the real going against the grain, because everything, all flows nowadays, flow with the money. You want to follow? You want to understand anything? Follow the trail of the money. You want to understand any scandal, any difficulty, any conflict, any takeover of one government from by another, any war, anything, anywhere? You follow where the money is flowing and you will find out everything. You want to find out everything in any spiritual organization anywhere? You follow the way the money flows. You will find out how things are manipulated. You will find out the motives for all actions, for all developments. You follow the money flow. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. And where that money is flowing, you will find enormous dishonesty around it, because those who are doing such things have to create smoke screens of delusion to hide the fact of where the money is flowing. It all has to be hidden. So I suppose, ultimately, that honesty, that last leg of religiosity in Kali Yuga, is being chopped down to nothing too. And I suppose I'm just trying a last stab at holding it together, splinting it. Okay, my harangue is over. I could take a few questions if you want. I don't know if you want. I don't even know if you were interested in any of this stuff. What is the force which unites people going against the grain? Well, it becomes another kind of a force. It's another current. In a world, life is not so simplistic that there's only one current. There are multiple currents, but some of them are stronger than others, and some of them are going on in places where the other current doesn't touch. We can use the example of air because it's very significant for airplanes. You may have at, let's say, 50 meters or 200 meters, a certain wind current going a certain way. But when you go up 1 kilometer in the air, there are totally different wind currents that affect the airplane. At different places, at different altitudes, or even, let's skip the analogy. Whenever there are currents, there are usually multiple currents that do not mix if they maintain their integrity as a current. An alternative spirituality is definitely a different current. However, when alternative spirituality dips down into that incredibly massive economic current, that incredibly massive money current, it gets sucked into it because that current is vastly more powerful than the spiritual current. The power of that economic current is enough to devastate all other currents. Therefore, you have to avoid totally contacting that current. Everybody needs money. So you have to, when you're going to make money in the economic current. But know what you're doing. I'm making money. Everybody needs spirituality. So do the spirituality. But when you're doing the spirituality, say, I'm only doing spirituality. As soon as the two have contact outside of any other methodology than a donation, there's a sucking away of the life of the spirituality. And it's not just money. There are other currents also. There's the current of, for example, ideas. The ideas that a family should be like this, or women should be like that, or people should have certain kinds of positions like that. These currents also are part of the materialistic current, which drag away the power of all spirituality. That's why in the Vedic culture, the sages lived in the forest. They lived in the forest. They didn't have any money. They didn't want any money. They didn't have anything to do with anything that had any contact with materialistic society, because they knew as soon as they were to have contact, they would be sucked into its affairs and all of their spirituality would be lost. And the same thing is there whenever knowledgeable people, scholarly people who are supposed to educate, who are supposed to give that guidance, become deviated by any of these currents which are outside of the current of actual goodness. So therefore, what I'm really saying is very simple. If you want to do spirituality, you keep it strictly, completely, and simply as spirituality. You don't mix it with other things. There is no need, there is no benefit, and it will simply destroy everything. And then you will find the people who lead it, or the people who work in it, will be of a different quality, because they will not be people who feel that it's in their own interest to do what they're doing, because they won't get anything out of it personally. Most people in spiritual organizations are screwed up because of leadership. And leadership is screwed up because they are burdened by having to make money. Nobody can win in such a situation. Therefore, leadership and economics have to be totally divorced from each other. And that is a rule for all spiritual organizations. I have another question here. I have a lot of questions here. Argentine question. The question says, okay, I'm feeling stronger than before in the spiritual sense. But, and I don't really understand how these two points connect, but the person is saying that 99 of persons will not understand because this person is no longer saying, I'm a Hare Krishna. And the people who I suppose he is connected to expect him to be like that. And therefore they criticize him as being meaningless. So how to deal with that perhaps? I don't see that proclaiming yourself as a Hare Krishna gives you any particular benefit. You can simply say, if you want, I'm a believer, if you want to use those words, or I love Radha and Krishna, or I am a student of, or I am influenced by Eastern philosophies. You can present like that. If you've noticed in these presentations, I never say I'm anything. I just say I have a topic here that I'm discussing. I don't see any need to have to label myself in any particular way. What's the point of it? It would even be very hard to label me. What particular label do I fit into? What particular category of speaker do I fit into? It's very difficult. I'm not really New Age. I'm not Hare Krishna. I am sometimes touching on Eastern philosophies. I am speaking a lot of common sense. I also speak about spiritual things, but to place me in some particular way of seeing it, sorry, I don't know how you would do that. But if you want to deal with devotees, let's say, and somehow work it out with them, just be kind and loving and appreciative of them, and that's all you really need. And you don't have to criticize anything they say or do. There's no need to. Okay, I have here other questions from Moscow. In spirituality, the most important thing is a real mystical experience. And the real experiences are so good that nothing else deviates one. Nothing else matters, even organizations or titles or authorities or power. Because the only real thing is the mystical experience, that which all realized souls or yogis have had. And this person is commenting that when spiritual organizations forget this point, that's why they have so many problems. And they're asking me, what do I think about that? I think it's correct. However, there's more to the problematic situations in spiritual organizations than simply that. And that I explained. It has to do with the way organizations support themselves, the way organizations get people to make money for them, the way in which everybody is depending on that money. It's these problems overshadow the mystical experiences and in fact crush them, because all of these arrangements crush realization. Now, of course, I could explain that in great detail of exactly how you are forced into accepting a subordinate position which becomes economically advantageous by doing whatever it is you're supposed to do, such as sell books or sell anything or make money in certain ways or give 50% of your income, blah, blah, blah. However, I'll skip all that because it's not really required. Obviously, real experience is required, and that's the real essence of everything, but all this other stuff clouds it. Now, I've got a question here which I'm not sure I want to answer. I'm not even sure I want to touch. Somebody's asking that after this great spiritualist came on this world, I'm not so sure which one you're referring to, but anyway, okay. The followers, or maybe many great spiritualists came in this world. Their followers made sects, which, of course, didn't bring about the essence of what the spiritualist came to bring, then what benefits they actually gave to the world. Did you follow that? Now, in other words, if a great leader descends, gives a wonderful spiritual message, and then everybody who follows them screws it up, so ultimately, what benefit did they really give to the world? That original spiritualist. It's a very deep question. Yeah, that's really something, isn't it? Can you imagine the frustration? The frustration of of Lord Chaitanya, for instance, to see to a certain extent what has become of what Lord Chaitanya wanted. Well, I suppose if you were God and you were frustrated by that, you would create arrangements so that this would be counteracted by other information, other presentations, other forms of giving the essence without all that stuff which screwed it up. And there are many people who are now doing kirtans or doing bhajans or who are giving chanting. It's actually becoming more popular, but has really nothing to do with ISKCON. There are other movements, other organizations. Even this Krishna Das, which I play, has nothing to do with ISKCON. It's some other organizations. But it's really wonderful stuff. So all that we really care is the essence. Somehow it'll go on. But it really has nothing to do with just chanting. All right, that sounded weird. It's not just chanting. There are other aspects to spirituality which are also important. For example, receiving the love from the Supreme and being able to accept it within your own heart without all of these unnecessary feelings of unworthiness or guilt or other manifestations which have been thrown upon you. So this is also happening within many other groups, becoming free from this. And here we have somebody sharing with us. I'll just quote what they are saying. To gain a real mystical experience, one doesn't need organizations. One just needs sincerity, honesty, and freedom. And as soon as one gets a real taste of spiritual experiences, one doesn't care about anything else, just wishes to help people as one can. And to this I say, amen, brother. I've run out of questions. That may be also good. Here comes one. The question is, for those who didn't hear it, better to approach angels or God as Kachayani for finding a partner in this world? Well, it depends. I mean, if you have contact with God as Kachayani, if you actually can connect, you actually have that reciprocation and you feel that there's something happening, then that's fine. But if you don't, then try to use the angels for that arrangement, because that you can feel very rapidly. That you can experience very rapidly. Whatever works, isn't that what really counts? You don't have to be stuck in something just because it's what you were supposed to do.